The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yeah, nothing to talk about this week.
Man, the deadline was just a bust. No really eventful games worth noting for the Wolves against, like, contenders or anything.
Yeah, just nothing. I don't know, man. This was just such a struggle, like, sitting here today before we started this taping and just thinking, man, what are we going to talk about?
There's took February off. I mean, yeah, we figured Super Bowl, slow week, and then Valentine's. Like, come back in March and just, you know, try again.
We are the Raised by Wolves podcast. We are presented by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And everything that you just heard a few minutes ago, or just a few moments ago, except for our friends at TCL, that was completely true. All that was a lie. We
Manny, you almost did your own live reading. Probably lost as a sponsor. Way to go. But at least you didn't do it.
No, we got plenty to talk about. Wow, trade deadline today. Holy buckets.
And there was this insane Wolves game yesterday, too.
Right, and that's like
is on the back burner. Not remotely interesting right now.
We will get to the Wolves and Cavs game throughout this podcast this week. But, wow, the elephant in the room, definitely the trade deadline today, and the Cleveland Cavaliers of all
trading
teams.
LeBron to the Timberwolves?
Yeah, how about
I
that?
I can't believe it.
Unbelievable, man. I just never thought I'd see that happen. No, the Cavs did make a huge, two rather significant moves at the deadline today. They got George Hill. They sent Isaiah Thomas to the Lakers. They got Jordan Clarkson back.
I had the list here. Just want me to read it off.
Yeah, just run it off because this is crazy.
So the Cavs traded Isaiah Thomas, Channing Frye, and a protected 2018 first round pick to the Los Angeles Lakers for Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr.
Now,
Clarkson.
Do we know the provisions on the protected pick?
Probably, but I forgot them. And
is it just like lottery protected or something?
I think
like
so.
That?
Something
top
like
20 protected.
I think it actually is lottery protected. It's not a very good pick, but it just goes to show you just what it took to get rid of Isaiah.
Yeah.
Just because of, I mean, and I've said this several times, I know I've tweeted it out, that you have a point guard who's 5'9", relies on his athleticism, and he has his hip surgery that ends careers. All we saw what Johnny Flynn was like after his hip surgery, and part of that I think was Kurt Rambis screwing them up, but the hip injury is a big deal.
Yes.
And so, I mean, you have that combined with the age factor. Like, he was going to hit a wall anyway, then you have the hip injury, and he's undersized and already a terrible defender. And it's like, that's concerning, especially for a guy who, and probably in his mind, still wants to get paid, and he's struggling, and there's strife, and I've had people telling me that, oh, well, this is LeBron, and it's like, no, this is Isaiah Thomas's pattern. As much as I've loved Isaiah Thomas,
yeah,
everywhere he's gone, there's been dysfunction. I mean, Sacramento and Phoenix, okay, those are dysfunctional organizations. You can probably just throw that away and say, well, it's just part of it. It's not a good situation to begin with. He goes to Boston. There were things that came out, like criticizing the way Brad Stevens coached publicly or complaining to Danny Ainge about stuff that they kept under wraps. Like, it didn't explode like it does in Cleveland. And granted, a lot of places don't have their news explode like Cleveland.
And hats off to the Celtics front office for keeping that stuff quiet and, for the most part, not letting it really affect
for such a leaky organization. If Danny Ainge goes to Jimmy John's for lunch, he leaked something about that. Like, I'm thinking a turkey tom or something. And so this is just the pattern with Isaiah Thomas. And I think that just getting that out of the locker room helps too. I mean, as good as he was, and maybe he still is, we don't know, but it's not promising. Anyway, so the other trades. Cavs trade Jay Crowder and Derrick Rose to the Jazz, and Amon Shumpert and a 2020 second round pick to the Kings. Jazz trade Rodney Hood to Cleveland and Joe Johnson to the Kings. Kings trade George Hill to Cleveland. Now, I don't know why Woj left the George Hill to Cleveland part, because that was the part where I was like, what? Like, that was the one that got me.
Yeah.
Then the Cavs moving Dwayne Wade back to Miami, which really surprised me, for a protected second round pick. I think it's basically like, oh, it's top 55 protected for a year, so they'll probably never see that. I don't know if that's protection, but it's probably similar.
Yeah.
And I think that was it. I don't know. It's not normally this hard to track trades for one team. I mean, they traded half of their roster.
Yeah, mid-season. They pretty much just revamped the. It was almost like last night's game was the final game of the season, and they just had like a little mini 12-hour off season or something, and just came back with a completely new roster.
See, and I don't think this is a thing like where Dan Gilbert's like, I want to keep LeBron, because there was that report that came out that he's sick of LeBron, you know, basically pushing him around, which is really funny. And I don't feel bad for Dan Gilbert because I just can't. And so I think it's more of like, well, if I'm spending all this money on this team, we are not going to win 40 games and lose in the first round. Like, that's just not a thing that's going to happen.
Right.
So I think that was probably part of it, wanting to get the most return on your investment and figuring out a way to still salvage this and save some face as an organization going forward.
And you get the sense, too, just getting Isaiah out of town, it just was not a situation that was
and
ideal.
Derrick Rose, too. Like, he hasn't been a great locker room guy wherever he's gone. And now, I mean, I think the nice thing is that they're younger. Wow. Because all year long, they looked a year older.
Yeah.
They, you know, it just didn't seem to really click anymore. But I thought it was funny that the guys that got paid after the 2016 title, J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson, were the ones that did not get moved.
Yeah, but Iman Shumpert is gone, too. They part ways with him. Wow, I mean, and we can sort of get into this too. We got Justin Rowan joining us this week on the
Fear the Sword, Cavs and Otta, another Canadian. We're sad this is like Canadian number 5 or 6 or something on the show.
So we'll definitely get into what this means for the Cavs going forward. At least certainly in the immediate future, the rest of this regular season. I guess they've got 29 games left. Just sort of with all these new players.
Realistically, the first round of the playoffs, too, let's be honest.
Right, right. So
I did want to ask you real quick, what do you think about Elfrid Payton and Emmanuel Mudiay, two former first-round draft picks, point guards, basically getting dumped off for second-rounders?
For nothing, yeah. Well, I think it was a good move for Phoenix, because they can bring Elfrid Payton in and
see
if they can get something of him. I mean, that could be kind of him and Devin Booker in that backcourt could be interesting to see. I don't know how it's going to work.
Because he went from being kind of a fringe Rookie of the Year candidate. You know, one of those guys where, like, in March, we're like, oh, we've been talking about this guy for Rookie of the Year, but what about this guy? And
right.
He doesn't have a shot. That was Elfrid Payton, whatever his rookie year was.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be interesting. Emmanuel Mudiay, I mean, he fell off the map, man. Like, everybody was talking about him before he got drafted, and then he just...
It was kind of rocky, then he came up, and then just crashed.
Yeah, to the point where he just was not even playable in Mike Malone's system out there in Denver.
But I guess Matt Moore said that, he tweeted out, because he's, you know, based in Denver, and he's Nuggets media, that I guess the coaching staff, you know, took a lot of responsibility for not being able to fix Mudiay and, you know, turn his career around and get him back on track. But, I mean, sometimes that's really the thing, but I don't know how... That's really going to work when you have, you know, two rookie point guards in New York now with Jarrett Jack still, you know, the veteran guy there. And he's probably their best point guard, but you kind of got to choose, you know, do we care about winning now? Do we, you know, really concede chasing a playoff spot in the name of development, or what are we doing here?
Yeah. Well, and in the Knicks case, I mean, they just lost KP for the season too with the ACL, and
which just probably leads me to say they should just focus on developing guys at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they sort of decide how that, you know, Mudiay-Ntilikina combination is going to work. Are they going to play them? They're going to play on the floor together a lot.
That seems bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're both size wouldn't be an issue. It just would be defensively
and they can't bleep
who's
and shoot.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how that goes. Wolves pretty quiet on the.
I think as expected. Did you expect anything?
I was expecting nothing. I mean, I would have been surprised if they did. The only thing I maybe could have seen them do was, you know, maybe if they found a deal for Shabazz to just sort of send him off and get like a second round pick or something in return.
Another top 55 for this year or something that was never going to convey.
Right. Right. But.
That's the thing, like, when he announces that, like, he wants to be traded or bought out, and they go, oh, well, he's going to push for a buyout, and we want to look at him. We'll just wait and not give up anything for him.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I was not expecting them to do anything, so I'm not surprised that they were pretty quiet at the deadline. So, I don't know. We'll see. There are the reports that the Wolves, after Derrick Rose is waived by the Utah Jazz, and that after he clears waivers, that the Wolves will be interested and will pursue him and try to reunite him with Tom Thibodeau, which is being met with some angst among Wolves Twitter.
Except for the ever-vigilant Rose Hive. They never take a day off. They never sleep.
They're still holding on to that MVP, 2011 MVP, Derrick Rose, right?
I'm surprised they're not like Springsteen fans where they correct, you know, like Springsteen fans be like, oh, the boss? Or they're like, oh, D. Rose? I mean, like, I feel like that's just like the same type of person.
I remember getting into a Facebook argument. This was one back years ago when I still like was on Facebook a lot and argued with people on Facebook a lot, which I don't engage in whatsoever anymore. But I got into a Facebook back and forth with somebody who just swore up and down that Derrick Rose was the best point guard in the NBA. And this is in the midst of Chris Paul, and when this was back when Chris Paul versus Deron Williams was like an actual thing.
Oh, yeah, those were fun times.
Yeah, and like this is when like Deron Williams, like you could make a case for Deron Williams being the best point guard in the NBA. And yeah, that the guy was just not.
You know, the dumbest Chris Paul, the ongoing Chris Paul argument I ever got in was when Darren Collison was a rookie and Chris Paul was hurt, and Darren Collison didn't play awful. So there was someone who insisted that Darren Collison was better than Chris Paul and they could trade Chris Paul. It was bad at the time, and it's only more awful now.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So, wow. Okay, quickly before we get to Justin, let's talk about the game.
Which we'll probably talk to Justin about too.
Yes, precisely. I where the hell was the defense?
Play on any defense.
On either side. Like, where was it? Was there any interest in defense?
Just because
whatsoever?
The other side sucks at defense, and I'm talking to both teams, right. Doesn't mean you have to suck too. You just have to suck less, and they both sucked equally.
I mean, the three-point shooting numbers were off the charts, which, you know, fine, whatever. Every once in a while, the Wolves are not a great three-point shooting team. Once in a while, they're going to have a great, you know, a really good shooting night. But this was, for both teams, this was primarily because nobody was closing out. Shooters were being left wide open all over the place. And, you know, the way LeBron James plays, you know, his vision is so good and his basketball IQ is off the charts. So he knows how to find an open guy before that guy even knows that he's open. So we get that part of it. But, man, my goodness. Like, somebody put a hand in somebody's face. Like,
at least pretend.
On. Yeah, at least pretend. Like, I don't. Yeah, that was bad. And, but, you know, LeBron makes the play and makes the winning shot, which I don't. Can you, for the life of me, understand why there were three guys?
For the life of you?
Yeah, just like why were there three Wolves guys guarding Cavs players in the backcourt on that play? I don't
it's not like
that.
They could have taken a step, but I would much rather force them to make a half court heave. I mean, you lose on a half court heave, it's whatever.
It is what it is, yeah.
But I mean, and then but to give LeBron a chance to make that shot is not something that I want to do.
Well, why was Cat like 15 feet away from who was the
he was guarding
man?
The inbounds.
Who was throwing it in, dude?
Jeff Green.
Was it Jeff Green? Okay. Well, why is Cat like? I mean, if you're guarding the inbound man, okay, fine, but like, get a little closer. Cat was like 15 feet away from him. I don't understand.
What was that doing?
Yeah, I don't know. That was
I guess
that was interesting.
Distract or obstructing his downcourt vision. But LeBron in that, I mean, just that block on Butler, the shots time and time again to tie it up was just so much fun. And just to see him, you know, engage that mode in the non-playoffs or non-final setting was kind of fun to see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So the Cavs beat the Wolves 140-138. Despite the fact that there was no defense played, it was a fun game. It was entertaining. It did. It could have gone either way. So at least that happened. All right. Let's get to Justin Rowan. He is the host of the Chase Down podcast and a writer for Fear the Sword. Justin Rowan joins us on the Raised by Wolves podcast. And I guess not much for you to talk about or think about today, right?
No. I mean, that's part of the burden of writing and talking about the Cavs is they really don't give you a lot to go off of. You really have to get creative and kind of play some games because they're boring. Like, nothing ever happens.
How sick of you are talking about this team at this point? Because I'm guessing you potted and written all day.
Well, I'm not really sick of talking about the team because this is a different team than it was like 7 hours ago.
It's funny. I was joking with Derek. Like, it seems like they had the game last night against the Wolves. It almost feels like that was the last game of that season, and they just had like a 12-hour off season where they just came back with a completely new roster.
Yeah, that seems pretty Cleveland Cavaliers. I've joked about this a couple times, but I guess Kevin Love is Teflon. Like, you figured that there was talk of him getting traded in his first year with the Cavs. He's survived to this point. He survived longer than Kyrie Irving. Half the team mutinies against him, and then that half of the team gets traded. So don't come after Kevin Love, I think, is the moral of the day.
How much have they missed him since he's been out?
Oh, God, so much. I mean, he's been one of their two reliable players this season. Career high in efficiency in terms of his true shooting percentage. They reduced his minutes, but yet his production was up in comparison to last season. So he's been great for them. I think him moving over to power forward was going to be the right move, and then God, he just gets that freak hand injury, gets his hand caught in the jersey, and now he's out for 6 to 8 weeks.
You get the feel. So I was thinking about this. This roster move doesn't feel like 2010 season when it was, oh, we got to keep LeBron, so we're going to trade for all these old washed up guys and hope LeBron can drag them far enough to where LeBron wants to stay. Yeah, all those guys. This feels more like Dan Gilbert saying, screw it. If LeBron won't waive his no trade, I'm going to get some return on this expensive investment and get guys where we could still turn this around and win.
I love Big Ben, but man, he was cooked by the time the Cavs got him, man. Wow.
Yeah, Big Ben wasn't terrible. That wasn't the last year of LeBron. I think that was 2 years prior.
Okay.
Where they traded for Wally Szczerbiak, Delonte West, Big Ben, and I'm forgetting. Well, I think Joe Smith was another guy that they picked up at that deadline. Yeah. And that worked out well, but then it was adding Shaq and then adding Jameson in that final year, which I thought adding Antoine Jameson for nothing would help, but it didn't at all.
Twan was so washed.
Oh, he was so washed. I remember. I think he went like 1 for 13 in his first game as a Cav. It was just fantastic. But yeah, this is a bit of a hedge move, I think, from the Cavs. They get a lot younger. They were by far the oldest team in the league. They added 3 25-year-olds and George Hill, who's 31. And they get younger. They get more athletic. They get longer, which is inevitable if you trade Isaiah Thomas for another NBA player. But yeah, I think that they did a good job of fixing a lot of their holes with this roster. I don't think consolidating guys into one player like a DeAndre Jordan was going to do anything for them. They just had too many issues. They needed an influx of athleticism, of talent, and I think they got that. And they managed to do it without giving up that Brooklyn Nets pick or selling it for too low. So now you have that as an asset to either use in the draft or in a draft night trade like the Wolves did with acquiring Jimmy Butler.
So how long, I mean, they've basically overhauled this roster. How long is it going to take for them to really sort of gel and get all these new guys coming in, Rodney Hood and George Hill and these guys, you know, Jordan Clarkson, to get used to playing with the best player on the planet? And I mean, this, at least for now, you know, we can get into what LeBron can potentially do this offseason in a little bit. But for right now, I mean, they've got to get themselves ready for the playoffs and potentially go on a deep playoff run. So how long is it going to take for this group to kind of gel together with LeBron?
I think there's two important things when you're looking at how this transition is going to go. The first is you are already starting at zero in terms of chemistry. It can't be worse than it was before. that team, those players hated one another. There was just a lot of issues in that locker room, and they got rid of those. So I think there's a bit of addition by subtraction. The other thing that's nice is you do have that All-Star break that's coming up. It's going to give them some time to spend around one another, maybe get a practice or two in. I think tomorrow's game, I don't know when this is dropping, but Friday's game is basically going to be a forfeit unless some of these guys get their physicals done quick, because they might have a six-man roster. But I think you have guys that are motivated, young guys that are looking for something to prove. Rodney Hood, his contract year, he's a restricted free agent. Well, with Kevin Love being out, I think he's probably going to be their second leading scorer over that stretch. George Hill should be a great fit. He'll be a little more motivated than he was in Sacramento. So hopefully he can kind of turn around his play on the defensive end. And then a guy like Larry Nance, I know I just saw a tweet before I came on here. Apparently he was basically in tears when he found out that he was traded to Cleveland, where he grew up. Obviously, yeah. His dad, his number retired in the rafters there. So it's a special opportunity for him. And I think with that up-tempo second unit that they like to have, he's going to get some opportunities playing alongside LeBron as long as he moves and he finds those kind of cutting lanes.
How bad was it with Isaiah Thomas? Like, be honest.
Oh, they hated him. I mean, I was honest. But, I was out on him from the beginning. Before the season, I wrote that the Cavs should consider flipping him in a first-round pick for Patrick Beverley. So I was under no illusions that he was another Kyrie. But yeah, it's one thing if he was frustrating on the court, like that he was working his way back and okay, he's missing some good shots, he's not going to play defense, no one expected him to play defense, but the fact that he would call out teammates routinely in the media, just no accountability from him, and the quotes, like they managed to replace a guy that believed the earth was flat with someone that says dumber quotes to the media. So I don't know how that was possible. But it was impressive. So I think they were pretty happy to get him out of that locker room.
See, and I had someone tell me today, they were so insistent that this was just LeBron, you know, micromanaging the roster and, you know, meddling. And it's like Isaiah Thomas has had this problem everywhere he's gone. And I mean, Phoenix and Sacramento can say, well, they're just dysfunctional. But there were still stories that came out of Boston when he was there. I mean, there just seems to be one common thread with Isaiah.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously the stories were a little reduced in Boston. I caught some flack from Celtics Twitter yesterday when I was saying that he was a problem everywhere, and they were like, I've never heard of him being a problem. And I remember the Kings, how they reacted after they got Isaiah out of there. Boogie was ecstatic. I think Jeff Hornacek had begged management in Phoenix to trade Isaiah. He wanted no part of him. And there were stories over the last few years in Boston. How that team gets covered, it's kind of like saying, well, Russian media doesn't say anything bad about Putin. So it's a little bit different, but there's still stories there. They just managed it. And it's easier when you're winning. It's easier when you are the sole offensive weapon on the team and the rest of the roster is basically designed to just spot up, shoot, play defense, and that's it. When you start playing alongside other all-stars and you contribute nothing when you don't have the ball in your hands, then it gets a little more difficult.
So as we go through the rest of this season and the Cavs, and they've got all these new players now and they're going to be trying to get all these guys to gel together, the big sort of, I don't want to call it a dark cloud, but it is some form of a cloud hovering over this team, is the future of LeBron James and what he's going to do. How are they going to sort of manage that sort of being in the back of their minds and still try to prepare themselves to try and go on a championship run potentially?
Yep. Probably not well. I mean, it puts pressure on the organization. I mean, this is the third time in the last 4 years that LeBron could leave at the end of the season, which brings a level of anxiety. I think one of the moves when they made that Lakers trade, it kind of speaks to how confident they are that they can retain him, which seems wild to think of. But by trading with the Lakers and allowing them to clear up that max cap space, it's that's a ballsy decision when you're like, that's one of the common places that people point to as a landing spot for LeBron. So I think that they put themselves in a good position. They showed that they aren't scared to make moves. I think they rectified and kind of made up for some of the goodwill that they lost with LeBron. I don't know if you saw Jason Lloyd's piece in The Athletic, but they talked about how this summer, basically, Dan Gilbert took over control of the team from David Griffin. LeBron was not included in any of the decision-making. He wasn't even notified about the Kyrie trade until 20 minutes before it happened. And the only thing that they kind of conceded to him was the signing of Wade, which was one of the only good signings that they had this year. Obviously, he got flipped in the grand shuffle. But I think that they put a team together that makes a little more sense around LeBron. They have their best asset there, which is that Nets pick that they can use either to draft a player that can be brought along, whether it be a point guard that can play under George Hill and around Clarkson, or a big man that they can bring along slowly. Or flip it. So I think it's tough to picture a lot of basketball situations right now that teams that have max cap space that could be more attractive to LeBron, but it's also LeBron. You have no idea what's going to happen with him. If he decides to leave, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of hard feelings, but they did whatever they could to put themselves in a better spot.
What's your gut feeling tell you? Is he back or is he going to go somewhere else?
I think he's back. I've kind of wavered on it a few times this year, but from everything I've heard, he's back. He wants to stay, and the only way he wouldn't be staying is if his hands were kind of forced, where it was this situation is just terrible. There's no hope for this roster. There's just not a lot of great spots, and I think he doesn't want to be someone that's viewed as a title chaser more than he already is. He's played for his two franchises, and I don't think he's looking to add a third and fourth jersey to the collection.
He's not looking to do like the Antoine Jameson retirement run where he has that weird
Shaq
season with the Clippers.
The rainbows.
Oh, that was so pathetic. He's not going to have Shamrock LeBron.
How does there need to be some sort of, I don't even know how to word it. Like, does his relationship with Dan Gilbert, does that need fixing? I mean, it's always been kind of,
I think it's
tumultuous, like, but
if I had to guess, I don't think in the next 2 years, I don't think both of them will be with this franchise. That's what I would say. It is rough. I wouldn't be surprised if Gilbert sells. We've heard some rumblings about that, and it's a tough position for him because if LeBron leaves the team, the value of the franchise just tanks.
Yeah.
But if Gilbert doesn't sell, then. Or if Gilbert does sell and cashes out with LeBron, it probably increases the likelihood that he stays. At the very least, if they want to manage the situation, there needs to be a respected middleman, which they had in David Griffin. But as we know with Gilbert, he's not giving a second contract to a general manager. He's going to cycle through them. And with each one that gets put in, they have less and less control than the person they're replacing.
I was just going to ask you, how do you think Altman's doing as the GM right now?
He ain't the GM. I think Altman's done a good job. He was someone that was viewed as having promise as a general manager, but I mean, he doesn't have a lot of control. He has league relationships, and I kind of imagine it as Dan Gilbert going in there, and he's got his direction he wants to go, and he's making some calls, and then Altman has to come in and be like, sorry, kind of play the good cop and try to mediate between the two parties. I don't have too many specifics on the relationship, but based on all the reporting that's out there, it's Gilbert's been the one that's running the show.
That's interesting, because I mean, it's just so funny how that old narrative of LeBron running the Cavs is just still so prevalent, and it's LeBron's so old and GM. So tired.
It's so tired, and the amazing thing about it is, look at LeBron. Look at who you're talking about. That is one of the most passive aggressive human beings on the planet. Mm-hmm. Like I know David Griffin had joked about it even back when he was the general manager. He's like, I wish we got more input from LeBron. He's like, he's a great basketball mind, but he's not the one making decisions. He's passive aggressive. He gets pouty, and that's part of the tax that comes with LeBron. You accept that. You accept the low points and all the frustrating things he does, because there's games like last night's game against the Wolves where all of a sudden he can drag any roster to a victory, and he can defy the odds.
We're talking with Justin Rowan from the Chase Down podcast and Fear the Sword as well. Covers all things Cleveland Cavaliers. All right, so our Wolves were taking on your Cavs last night.
Yes.
On national TV. Me and Derek are still trying to figure out where the hell the defense was on either side. But it was a fun game. LeBron hits the winner at the end. And just let me get your thoughts on the Wolves. I know the first time they played the Cavs, they kind of ran Cleveland out of the gym.
I almost came down to that game. That would have drove down to that one. That would have been rough.
Because you're only in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah, that 6-hour drive back home would be rough, but at least I'd get to see my hometown Wolves win.
But what are your thoughts on how the Wolves have looked this year? It's been it's been kind of a mixed bag in terms of how the fans have looked at the team this year. They're winning. They're right there in the playoffs. They're probably
be unhappier.
Yeah, and it's like people are still anxious and mad, and you know they're. We got the reports about, you know, the rumors about Derrick Rose potentially coming here now, and people are all worked up about that, which I kind of understand from that perspective. But what are your thoughts on the Wolves so far?
Man, pray for Patrick Fenelon. When Derrick Rose is playing over Tyus Jones, pray for that man.
Yes.
There might not be enough beer in St. Paul to make him feel better.
There absolutely is not. And I have enjoyed many beverages with him, and I can only imagine how he would be. I don't know. I thought the Wolves did a great job, obviously, acquiring Jimmy Butler. I thought that was the perfect move for what they needed. Great mentor. Obviously, his arrival has kind of led to an adjustment period for Andrew Wiggins, yeah. Which... that adjustment period has kind of gone opposite of what you'd expect. He started the season just phenomenal with his play, looked better defensively, or at least more consistent on the defensive end, because we know he can play great individual defense at times, and had been shooting the ball well. And then kind of as the season progressed, you see Jimmy Butler being a little more assertive when it comes to getting his own shots. And that balance is kind of one of the most interesting things with the Wolves, because if you get both of those guys firing on all cylinders, mm-hmm. and you got someone like Cat who just as we all know has that like MVP caliber ceiling, this is a really damn scary team, and they're a lot of fun. I wish they shot more threes, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way.
Yes, we do.
I wrote 1500 words on that last week.
Yeah, and they responded. Like, they obviously listened to you, because they were part of a game where an NBA record for made threes was set.
Hold on, so, I have to cut you off there, because I think there is actually something to this. Because after the Philly game,
You're pumping your own tires right now? Is that what's
yes,
going on?
Yes, I totally am. Because after the Philly game, that was the overtime game in Minneapolis when The Wolves starters were all 43, 45, 46 minutes, whatever.
And but Taj was passed out.
Yeah, he was dead after the third quarter. And none of the Sixers, even in the same overtime game, they too played overtime, none of them had 40 minutes. And after that, I wrote, oh, they need to expand the rotation. You can't have an eight-man rotation in the middle of December. That is madness.
And then Marcus George's Hunt was, like, playing in the next game, right?
Like, right. This is a thing that is happening.
I like that. I like that a lot. Man, one of the funniest tweets I saw today was Derrick Rose gave his knees for Tom Thibodeau. Now he's going to give his lungs.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean the three-point shooting thing has been we knew, Justin, going into this year that it was going to be kind of a challenge for them because you looked up and down the roster and you're like, okay, Andrew Wiggins, not a great three-point shooter. Jimmy Butler, great player, not a great three-point shooter. Yeah. They didn't really there's no real stretch four on the roster. And then, it's like Jeff Teague, okay, capable shooter, but not really a great shooter. So we kind of knew that three-point shooting and spreading the floor was going to be kind of an issue. But man, it's just when you see it when they lose games, you see it's like, okay, they lost by five and they went 3 for 11 from three-point range, and the team they lost
it's to the went, looking off open threes to yeah. take two steps in for the long two.
And the team they lost to went 10 for 27 from three. And it's like, shoot more.
Man, there's nothing worse than that step in long two. And that's the frustrating thing is like they actually do have a very good offense, but when you don't take open threes, even if you're a below average shooter, it hurts the flow of the offense because something happened to result in you getting that open look. And when you're not taking that shot, it gives the defense time to rotate and time to adjust. And the odds of you in a 24-second shot clock producing another wide open look are a little slim. So the Wolves can be frustrating. Watching how Wolves Twitter has reacted to this season, it brings back sweet, sweet memories of 14-15 from the Cavs. Because when you go from like years of expecting everything to go wrong and like to success, but with frustrating steps along the way, like just everything that goes wrong feels like the sky is falling, and you're just so used to things going poorly. And the Wolves, just like the Cavs, and that's part of why I like Wolves and their fans, is the inferiority complex. Like it's relatable as hell to me, and it's funny when I see it.
That's so perfect because I remember that season, and Cavs fans were, always on edge. They had, they were, it's kind of the Cleveland jokes and had never gotten over
their damn minds.
Well, and LeBron he was no fun that season. I hate watched that team all season long, and he just played with so much burden until they won the title. And like the fans seem to just carry that same burden of the last 14 years of...
No, regular season LeBron is not fun. You get nights like last night, but it comes with a tax. He is damn worth it, but like that's why when Kyrie requested a trade, I wrote an article. I was like, this is frustrating. I wish that they could work the situation out. I think if David Griffin was still there, they'd have a better chance of working that out. But you get it. Like the grind of being next to LeBron all the time.
KG was apparently the same way in his first stint, where guys did not like dealing with him behind the scenes because he was such a pain in the butt sometimes. They kept him around, of course. He's an MVP level player, but he's a pain in the butt to deal with behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yep. I miss KG.
We all do.
I know. We all do too. I mean, I am just waiting for that day when that 21 goes into the rafters at Target Center, and it's the team has, and Glenn Taylor and Tom Thibodeau and Scott Layden, all of them, they've all basically said whenever KG's ready, that door is open for him to come in and have that 21 go up into the rafters.
And it is just, 5 going up in Boston before 21.
I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to like really
probably go for the gun. No, that was like that wasn't like
I mean, that's a good question. I guess it probably
it seems like it all has to do with the relationship with the front office, right?
Yeah. I think that bridge has been burned too many times. And without Flip to, you know, be kind of the intermediary there again.
Because Flip was totally the guy that got when
that
they
would pass
Cajun
around
back.
A blunt and have the team talk.
There was no way KG was coming back from Brooklyn without Flip. And I don't think as long as Glenn Taylor runs, barring some miracle or, you know, some Marvin's Room moment, you know, from Glenn Taylor to KG, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Which is just such a shame because that's
such a shame.
I mean, it is because it's like he's the greatest player in franchise history. Like he's the all-time statistical leader in basically everything.
And he doesn't want to punish the fans. Yeah. But I don't think he can just bring himself to stand next to Glenn.
That 21 has got to be up there, man. Like, come on, KG. Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. But yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think that because Boston is going to be always special to KG,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like he won the title there. I mean, he had that crazy brotherhood with Paul Pierce and Rondo and those guys. And, you know, I mean,
know what the Wolves got to do? They got to do what the Cavs did with LeBron to mend the bridge. They retired the jersey of someone close to him with Zydrunas Ilgauskas. The Wolves got to do that.
Sam Mitchell's getting 42 in the rafters.
Yeah. It's someone that's going to bring KG out of the woodwork that he would be there, and then you kind of pull out all the stops to make him feel comfortable and try to put some of those bridges back together.
Well, they already have Malik Sealy up there, who is one of KG's close friends, of course, tragically died on you know KG's birthday. And so are they just going to, like, retire Troy Hudson, then give him a call, be like, hey, we're putting T-Huds up. No? All right. Trent Hassel goes up.
Put Gary Trent's number 20 in the Raptors.
Starbury's going up.
Oh, yeah.
He played with Terrell Brandon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Let's get Doug West up in the Raptors.
Yeah. Wally Szczerbiak.
I don't think so.
I don't know if Wally would be up there.
I don't know. Don't consider anything.
I don't know if that's going to get KG back, getting Wally's number up there.
I remember punching him in the face. Or was that the other way around? I forget which way that one went.
I think KG punched him.
He punched a lot of guys.
Doesn't matter.
Not really. No, it's the same thing.
It doesn't matter. Justin, we loved having you on, man. Thanks for joining. And I think as we get closer to the playoffs, and there's probably still going to be some drama surrounding the Cleveland Cavaliers, because when is there not, right?
Yep. No, I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's a lot of fun, and love to come on another time. Hope all the best to you guys. I mean, it's as we said, it's tough when you get that first real winning season, but I think you guys have the possibility of making some noise, maybe a solid second round appearance, and then you just kind of keep building off of that. So I hope for nothing but the best for you guys, and hope that all works out.
He is Justin Rowan of the Chase Down podcast and writer for Fear the Sword as well. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
No problem. Thanks again.
All right. Good chat there with Justin.
I knew it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And, wow. So, trade deadline is behind us. Cavaliers make a big splash. And Wolves are a little bit quiet, but we'll see what happens. Derrick Rose.
It's buyout season, man.
Yeah. Buyout season's next. And
We tape this now, that means that someone will get bought out and signed tomorrow. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Exactly. We may have to be like, damn, we're going to have to add that into the pod. I don't know. We'll see. Of course, Raised by Wolves, we are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Thanks to Justin Rowan for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. You can find us on iTunes, Podcast One, 1500ESPN.com. I'm Manny Hill. That's Derek James. Enjoy your Wolves basketball, and we'll talk to you next time.